the Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio, the smarter way to make radio.
Welcome to the Radio Today programme. This week we have Daryl Morris back in the hot seat. He had such a good reaction from his interview last week that he's back on this week and he's talking to somebody different. He's talking to Dean from the Gadio Breakfast Show, which is on FM in various places around, well, two places, Manchester and Brighton, and then on DAB in loads of places around the UK. And he's talking to him about hosting a breakfast show over the last 12 months during the pandemic, serving the LGBTQ plus community during a time of crisis, growing up gay in Northern Ireland, and then landing his dream job on BBC Radio 1. Daryl, for the second time, it's all yours.
Thank you very much to the fine folk at Radio Today for letting me hijack their podcast again. This time, to have a conversation with somebody who I wanted to talk to for a couple of reasons. Dean McCulloch, who hosts the Breakfast Show on Gadio, a national radio station aimed at the LGBTQ plus community, who also did his first show on BBC Radio 1 over Christmas as part of a slate of new presenters who were given the chance to do shows on a massive radio network and to fulfil a dream. So the first point, I suppose, is to ask how that felt. How does it feel to fulfil a dream, to live a dream in that kind of a way? But also, Dean finds himself on an interesting front line of sorts. I remember doing a piece on my talk radio show a couple of months ago where we were talking about the impact of lockdown on the LGBTQ plus community, particularly people who aren't out, who find themselves essentially trapped at home, living with people who don't really know who they are, who they've not been able to be out to. And what kind of a toll that takes on them. Dean is on the front line of offering support and entertainment and escapism and all of that sort of stuff on a radio station that is effectively aimed pretty squarely at those kind of people. And that must take its toll. So I really wanted to know all about that. It's also a very neat example, I think, of the power and the importance of radio at a time like this. We got into that. Also growing up gay in Northern Ireland and getting into radio through Northern Ireland as well, the radio scene in that part of the world. It's a really personal and powerful story, this, and I really enjoyed spending time with Dean. I hope that you enjoy it too and find it insightful. So, tough gig, tough time. I started off by asking him how he was finding it.
Do you know what? Before Christmas, I was drowning. I was going to pack it all in, because I just thought, I can't do this. I really can't do this. I lost my co-host in July because her sister wasn't very well. And so because of COVID as well, I don't have any producers or tech support or anything like that. Everything's done remotely. So it was a real struggle. And I was just like, every day, you know, that alarm goes off at 5:15 and you're like, oh, and at the best of times, I'm like, oh, but during this second lockdown was just really, really hard. And it got to Christmas and I was just sort of stood looking at my boss on like the 23rd of December. And I was like, with tears in my eyes, I was like, I need some help, because as broadcasters, we take on so much. Like, we listen to the news at every junction, where we're absorbing all of that information and we're living it. And we're trying to broadcast it at the same time. So everybody else gets to go and like hide their head under their duvet. But every day we've got to get up and we've got to try to entertain the nation, keep the nation engaged, keep them company, and also report what's going on. So that's been tricky. However, the Radio 1 thing came along at just the right time. And actually, when Alad rang me to tell me, I burst out crying, because I was like, Alad, you don't know how much I need this right now for like myself. And it came along at the most beautiful time. And then, of course, I've gone from like having no co-host, no producers, tech support, to being at Radio 1 over Christmas, where you've got everything you want. You've got everything you need. You've got the most supportive team. You've got your producer, your AP, and just all these people around that just want you to do really well. I'm not saying that I don't get that at Gadio. If I didn't get it at Gadio, I wouldn't be there for 3 years. But it was just that nice bit of sunshine that I needed in a really, really dark time.
You know, your job as a breakfast presenter, particularly on Gadio, is, as you say, kind of all consuming, because you need to be across what's going on and you need to do the topical stuff. But also your contract with the audience, I suppose, is that they come to you for a certain type of quite positive, you know, entertainment, right? That's a really tough contract to stick to when you're not feeling great yourself.
Yeah, and actually, I underestimated how much I was needed, or not just me personally, but that show, because I'd came from Drive, which is a completely different offering at Gaydio, because it's really upbeat. Every day's a party at Gaydio, and the dance music is there to kind of uplift you, make you feel good. But in the morning, we're still providing that party atmosphere, but there has to be that one-to-one relationship with our community, which is, it's different, like you say, because the LGBT community are so dispersed and they're so segregated generally. And what I noticed really early on, actually, when I went on Breakfast, was how much people just needed a friend. They just need company. They just need to know that they can turn their radio on every morning and somebody's going to be there that doesn't judge them. And if that's me taking them into work and then they turn Gaydio off and then they go into a workplace that they don't want to, or they're leaving their home where they can't be themselves and they just have me on just for that break in their mind where they can just be who they want to be. And I don't witter on about being LGBT plus the whole time at all. That's almost like a byproduct. We're all the same. But I was getting so many messages. I mean, I actually got two or three messages within the first lockdown of people saying that if it wasn't for that show, that they would have taken their life. And I got a message from somebody, and this was like in the height of Black Lives Matter as well. And you know how difficult that was, because we're white men on the radio trying to talk about issues that we've got no clue about. So it was really hard and I felt really out of my depth. But I got this message from this one listener who isn't out to their family. And they messaged me on the Friday at 10 o'clock and they said, thank you for an amazing week. I really need your company. This week was really dark for me. I didn't want to be here anymore. I had been up all night and I had the tablets sat out ready to do it. And my alarm went off. You are my alarm. And because I heard your voice, it stopped me from doing it. So I just want to say thank you. I had to ring my boss. I was like, what do I do with that information? Like, you know, you underestimate the power of radio and it doesn't feed my ego at all. If anything, it breaks my heart, you know?
What do you do with that? How do you process that?
Well, I actually broke down massively. I said to my boss, I was like, look, I need to switch off for the weekend. I need to get myself together because it has been a crazy week. And I just checked in with that person over the weekend and I just was casually like, how are you doing? Like sent them a little post, a little inspirational post. And I was like, you know, let me know if you want a song played on Monday. And they're like, oh my God, really? And I think they requested a Little Mix. So I think it was the second song I played. They wanted a bit of Little Mix and they listen every single day. And that's the beautiful thing about our community as well. And the Gaydio listeners who are so engaged because they really enjoy just being able to come along and just to chat and that you want to see them. I've never experienced anything like it. They all tweet each other. I can see it coming in the inbox, but they're all tweeting each other. I'm like, hello, trying to do a show here. And they're all like chatting about the weekend. But that's exactly what we want. And this year I'm approaching things a little bit differently too and trying to look after my own self too. You know what it's like, you have to switch off, even though I never do, always thinking about radio, but just trying to think about things in a healthier way. And it's made me a better broadcaster, definitely.
Okay, so my instincts, my reaction to that is that you could either be spurred on by knowing the importance of what you do, and that can be a real motivating factor, mm-hmm. or it could also be quite a paralyzing experience to know that somebody is putting so much of them in your hands, of themselves in your hands, really.
It's true. I was actually definitely during the first lockdown, I would come home from work and it was like 10:15, but because it was sunny, I was like, oh, well, I can have a vodka. So I was like having a little vodka, having a little cocktail and or having a glass of wine. And then I would just drink all weekend. And I didn't realize I was doing it. I would rock up to work on Monday and I would be like, my head wasn't in the game because I didn't want it to be in the game because I couldn't cope with what was going on. It was just crazy. And then I noticed this pattern. I was thinking, this isn't quite right. You know, it shouldn't be like this. And the tweets were still coming in. The messages were still coming in. And I was going, and I was almost like, it was all happening underneath me. So it's amazing how these really strange messages come in the strangest ways. You know, I was seeing all the messages coming in at inboxes. I wasn't connecting with them. I was playing music. I was very much doing my job. And the shows were brilliant. The guests were amazing. But I, my body, my body was there, but my mind wasn't there. You know what I mean? And I went, no, I can't be the person that I want to be as a broadcaster if I'm not 100% in the game. So I just made little changes, and it's definitely paid off. But yeah, it was hard. It was really hard on my mind. If I didn't have the friends I had, if I didn't have the family that I had, I think that so many broadcasters out there in the last 12 months have been completely, we've had to really take a look at it all, in every facet of it all, you know, and how we apply ourselves to our job to get the best out of the show, to get the best out of our listener, the best out of our content. And that does come at a price. You do lose quite a bit of yourself in that.
Which is a hard kind of juxtaposition, isn't it? Because being present and being yourself is the most important thing that we do. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, a lot of that gets chipped away when you're under that kind of pressure. I did an item on this on my show recently about not so recently, actually. It was probably about a decade ago now. Where are we up to?
I do that.
How impacted the LGBTQ+ community are by lockdowns, and actually those people particularly who aren't out, who don't have a good sort of strong support network around them, who are perhaps stuck at home with people who don't really know who they are, you know, or they can't be who they are in front of those people or around those people. And you're kind of on the front line of being their safety net. I mean, if all they've got is to be able to flick you on, mm-hmm. that's a huge amount of pressure for you.
But it's also a massive privilege, and I don't take any of it for granted at all. And I tread really carefully whenever I'm picking content, whenever I'm selecting guests and trying to measure the temperature of the room. Because if we did it's really hard because there were statistics out, and often I get press releases sent through from all of these charities, these data people, and they're like, you know, 63 for toxic, theoretically toxic, 63% of LGBT Muslims are not out to their family at the moment, and lockdown has increased their calls to this by that. And I'm like, what do I do with this information? Do I take this and do this as a piece, as a conversation piece? Do I do it as a story? Do I get somebody on? Or do I get it put out on our social media, connect people to the support that they need, and carry on with an entertaining, distracting show for these people? Because I know what it's like. And the last thing that I want, it's like this, when you're feeling rubbish and you go to work, people are talking about coronavirus, you go to the shop and you can overhear people talking about coronavirus. The reason why we turn on radio is to escape. So if I'm talking too much about these really important subjects to LGBT people, they might switch off, and they might it might trigger them. You know, you've got to be very careful as to which content we use and which conversations I have and not. But I always know, because I'll hear what's in the news and I'll riff off the back of the news and throw something out. And if it gets picked up, then I'm like, this is a conversation that we need to have today. But sometimes it's presenter led, unless it's something really important. Like we did a piece, it could have been a decade ago, but we did a piece recently about LGBT Muslims and how one chap had killed himself because his family just wouldn't accept his sexuality. It was against their religion. And I dedicated a whole show to it, Daryl. We did it as a full show. And the response was remarkable because LGBT people are in their own minorities within the community. So they really react well and come together really well. And I just peppered that through with amazing music and the odd little bit of fun stuff in there. But essentially the whole show was about that. So it's really hard to try and find that balance. But I hope, and I've heard from those groups and from those minority ethnic groups as well, when we talked about the Black Lives Matter stuff, they're like, thank you for broadcasting in this way. And you sort of go, are you sure? Like, what would you have liked me to have done differently? Because I don't know. Sometimes, you know, you kind of wake up in the morning, you're like, right, we're going to talk about this today. Let's just try and see how we can best serve the listener and give the listener what they want. And you always want to get it right. And I think they know as well, they're very forgiving, you know, they're your friend and you give them all sorts of news. So I think whenever you're talking about LGBT issues specifically, and they know my work within the community aside from broadcasting, so they know that I believe, they know that I've got their back. I'm there to try to kind of champion them as well. And I get them on whenever they want to talk to. So it's cheesy, but we're a family, you know, and when someone's got an issue, we've all got an issue. So we'll talk about it until we're done talking about it. And then we'll play a song.
One of the great things about radio is discovery as much as it is reflection, right? Yeah. That you as a host can kind of reflect your life and they will pick up bits that they can identify with. But equally, you're kind of trying to learn a bit about them as well, which is true for all radio, but it strikes me that perhaps more so for what you do. Mm-hmm. And so you're Irish. You're Northern Ireland, I imagine. Whereabouts are you from originally?
I'm from Belfast.
Belfast.
I grew up in the third biggest council estate in Belfast, so in the thick of it.
My assumption is that isn't an easy place to grow up gay.
No, not at all. Even recently, you know, same-sex marriage only became legalised last year, so it was one of the last places in the whole of Europe for that to pass. So I moved out when I was 17. I moved to London to go to drama school. But growing up, it was really, really, really tough. Like really tough, because not only was I balancing trying to work out who I was growing up in Belfast, but Belfast was going through its own stuff. And the politics of Northern Ireland is just, it's fascinating, but living it is quite scary. Like my birthday is on the 9th of July, and marching season in Northern Ireland is the 11th and 12th of July. And year after year after year, my birthdays just kept getting cancelled because there were cars burnt out at the bottom of the street. Somebody's cousin had been shot. There was a funeral that was going on instead. You know, it's the celebration of the Battle of the Somme. So it's King Billy. It's that whole United Ireland fighting for Northern Ireland to be Northern Ireland, and they march across the country to kind of show their victory. You know, I just dug my head in pop music and dancing when all this was going on, but I didn't realize psychologically how much of an effect it was having on me. So trying to pluck up the courage to tell your mum and dad or your friends that you might like boys amongst all of that, being bullied in school, There was never the right time. And being Catholic and Protestant, you know, some of my family are Catholic, some of my family are Protestant, kind of. We weren't really ever anything. So I was going to both sides of Belfast. I don't know whether you know, but there's a big wall in the middle of Belfast. There's streets, one side's Protestant, one side's Catholic. I've got friends on both. So at the weekend, it was weird because you'd see cars getting joyride, cars getting burnt out, people being killed, you know, my cousin was murdered by the paramilitaries in Northern Ireland. So it's really, that fear is really ingrained in our family. And I've got an amazing family, but I just never, it was never the right time for me to say, look guys, I'm gay. My mummy had to drag it out of me when I was 16. She was like, she sat me down and she was like, so is there anything that you need to tell me? And I was like, oh, no, why would I have done that? Because I was up to everything. Like I was partying from I was like 15. So I thought that she'd like find text messages or something or knew of something. And she was like, look, I know there's something you need to tell me. And she dragged it out. She was like, I know that, you know, that you don't like girls and that you might like boys instead. And I was like, no, no, no. And I completely tried to put the wool over her eyes. And she just grabbed me and hugged me and was like, shut up, give me a hug. And that's how that happened. And it's really weird now because I could never have even said the words I'm gay. As a gay man, you have that phrase running over and over. It keeps you awake at night. It's petrifying when a conversation is going that way and you're like, you know, and you can feel it. So that fear was, I was holding all that in. And it's so weird now that I say gay-dio about 1,000 times a week. I say I champion my sexuality, and even though it's a really, really small part of me, I champion our community. I say those words and enjoy that conversation, you know, as much as anybody and as anybody in the community. But once upon a time, you would never have catch me saying those words.
Mm. That is quite a journey, isn't it, when you think about it? Growing up in Northern Ireland, feeling that way to literally saying it every day on the radio. Did you ever feel unsafe?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. The thing is, I was more afraid of being I was more afraid of the paramilitaries, the gangs. It would be sort of like the gangs that you hear about and that are documented in dramas and stuff in places like, you know, all your Peaky Blinders kinds of stuff. Imagine that, but a paramilitary organization that works with the police, that are colluded and they carry out punishment beatings where they get your knees done and that sort of thing. I was more worried about that than being gay at the time. But then I also thought, because of the kind of school that I went to, that those boys who bullied me so badly, that would have been something that would have happened to me. You know, it wasn't like, oh, we're gonna find out that you're gay, and then there wasn't really any social media then, but you know, we're gonna tell everybody and it's gonna be a massive shame. It was like, no, actually, if we find out that you're gay, there might be a brick put through your front window, you might find yourself lying in a heap at the bottom of an alleyway because I walked home a certain way through a Catholic estate in my uniform. You know, it was all those kinds of things, but I was full of fear. But I am so grateful of all of that experience, because I had my eyes opened, you know, my 7th birthday. You know, Mum, why can't we go and see Shrek? Because there's been such and such has happened and the roads are closed. Oh, okay. Well, where are we going instead? I still knew that something was going wrong. I remember at age like 4 and 5, going on a black taxi into Belfast, sat on my mummy's knee in a packed black taxi, the windows all fogged up because it was raining. But I remember putting a wee hole in the window and wiping away the fog and looking out and seeing all the cars burnt out along the street. And I said to my mum in this packed black taxi, "Mummy, the rain has made those cars rusty." And she was like, "Yeah, they're rusty cars, but actually they'd all been burnt out, you know?" So it's all those wee moments that you can sort of, they make great stories, and there'll be a fantastic couple of chapters in my book. But it just allows me to connect with people more now. And when I interview LGBT asylum seekers who've came from a country from terror, or when I hear about those people someone who was beat up or someone that was killed for being gay, I'm like, I've got no idea how that feels, but I have a pretty good idea. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. You can empathize with the risk involved in that. Mm-hmm. And does that sort of carry into your performance, do you think?
You know, we've been talking about the situation in Northern Ireland for quite some time at Gaydio. In fact, I think my Gaydio anniversary is this weekend, so I've been there for exactly 3 years. And the very first show I ever did, which was actually a pilot, was the day after St. Patrick's Day. So I put the mic up and began to talk about Ireland in my very first link. And I remember feeling, because I'm in England and I'm in Manchester where Gaydio was based, trying to explain to people what the beautiful country of Ireland is like, the rich culture, the long history of writers and performers and singers and terrorists and all of that. And then try to say, okay, now it's all well and good that you're arguing because there's a street in your local gay village that is going to be closed for a couple of months, and that's your headline today, listeners. However, I need to tell you that there are still people in Northern Ireland that can't get married. So it's hard to try and not be so boxy and still relate to everybody, but just having to fight in the very small way that I could on my show, and seeing all of my friends on social media and whose weddings and who just want to get married. And then there was the whole cake debate, and I'm trying to explain the cake debate to people in Northern Ireland. It's hard, but I always say, it doesn't matter what we're talking about when it comes to Belfast, I will always be proud of Belfast. And I want to make it my mission now, for as long as my broadcasting career will last, to put Belfast on the map, because it does get a bit of a reputation in the LGBT community and in news as well. People still think that Ireland's full of bombs and people are killing each other. And to a certain degree, they are. But it's a beautiful place to be. So I suppose it runs in my blood. I never forget that I'm from Belfast, and I never will. You know, I'm not going to round off my accent or round off my personality or, you know, make Manchester my home. I lived in London for 8 years. It was never my home. Belfast is my home, and the people of Belfast are crying out for somebody on the radio to connect with. because I saw it at Radio 1. They saw it at Radio 1. And it's important that we don't forget that wee country that makes up quite a strong what's the word? Like a good strong relative to the United Kingdom. They've got a lot to say. We mustn't forget that.
Well, it's a piece of our identity as well, isn't it? It's a really big piece, and it's not always been the easiest relationship, but it is a strong part of our identity. You talked there about burying your head in pop music and popular culture when growing up gay in Northern Ireland, and you've kind of there's an interesting sort of full circle going on there, because you know, there are people who have reached out to you who are in a similar situation that you were in this lockdown, who've had to bury their head in your offering of pop culture and music, right?
Yeah, for sure. And actually, Dean FM was born in my bedroom. like I'm sure you had your own radio station too, did you, Sarah? I think I had just been given a karaoke machine, and I worked out that I could record stuff on it, and I could record music and my voice back into it. I think I was probably about 10 or 11, and Steps were like dominating the charts. Spice Girls were doing their thing. And I just used to, because I couldn't always go out. I didn't have a massive group of friends on the street because I was different. And I wasn't going to play football with the boys, and I didn't want to be seen with the girls. So I spent my time sometimes in my bedroom doing Dean FM, which was a great radio station. So I am aware of that. I just wish that I could have just turned on the radio and heard Gaydio, to be honest. I really do. And I probably would have kept it a secret, like lots of my listeners do too. I know some of my listeners that have the app on their phone and they delete it every day because they don't want people to see it on their phone, you know? So it is a bit of a full circle, but I buried my head into my dancing, into my singing, into my acting, and it definitely saved me. It saved me from potentially being involved with crime, potentially getting swept up and just not really caring about life, which is what happens to a lot of young people in Northern Ireland. The mental health statistics in men in Northern Ireland are the worst in the United Kingdom. I could have been one of those people. Statistically and by the look of everything, that was very much could have happened, but the arts definitely saved me. Definitely. I always say that. And having radio, having Chris Moyles in my ear every day when I was going to high school, and just knowing that he was there in all of his flaws, he was there listening, and the show that they put on kept me company every day when I had no one to walk to school with.
Which gives you, and you have given people, I guess, I mean, we're talking about a sense of purpose there, aren't we, really? Mm-hmm. As much as the entertainment factor, you are giving people a sense of purpose, which we know radio does. It does well. You know, it's such an important part of what we do. And so there's another full circle there then, of going to school with Chris Moyles on Radio 1 in your ear. to then being on Radio 1. So this Christmas, you were part of the lineup of new presenters on Radio 1. And was it two or three shows you did over Christmas?
Yeah, I did 2 4-hour shows, yeah.
2 4-hour shows. And I remember being on quite a long drive over Christmas and listening to you for a good chunk of at least one of them. And you sounded really good, really at home, really natural. How was it? How did it feel?
It was the best day of my life. I've had a great life, but this was like, I felt like everything had been leading up to that point. All of the learning, all of the people, all of my growth and my sheer want to be on the radio, it all led up to that one point. I'm still processing what happened. And when I feel a bit rubbish, or if I need to pick me up, I will go back to BBC Sounds and listen to my show. And it really does. It really just, it takes me by surprise, because I was in the moment and I enjoyed every single second of it. But it's only when you listen back in a different setting that you go, gosh, that's me. Like, that's me on Radio 1. Like, this is insane. This is insane. But being there in the studio, it did feel like home. Actually, it really did. Not like in a cocky way or anything like that, but I really worked really hard for it. I really, really wanted it. And I was so grateful for it. Like, from the pit of my stomach, I was grateful. So I just, when I remember when I was walking up to Broadcasting House to do my rehearsals the day before, and I took this picture and I just looked and I went, this is it. This is it. And even if I just do these this week and I enjoy all of this, this is so perfect. So perfect. It was magical. And the people that I met and the listeners, oh my God, the listeners, we were talking before about that need for communication. And there has never been so many people from Northern Ireland that have texted into Radio 1 ever than there was in this show. It was like, I was even saying to my producer, is no one else texting in? And they were like, our inboxes were flooded with full of people from Northern Ireland. So that was magical, you know, just to think, because I think as presenters, we know the people that listen, we have these spaces in our head where we're like, you know, we let people listen on the tube, people listen on the tram, they listen in taxis, they listen here, there and everywhere. But then you don't think of like those places in Belfast, those doctors' waiting rooms, those receptions, those places that I know I've heard Radio 1 on. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I was on that. That was me for 2 days in Belfast, in my home country, and then the rest of the UK. You know, that reach, you know, you don't want to think of the millions of people that are listening, but it's really nice to reflect on that as well and think, you know, we did all right. We did all right.
That never gets old, does it? That tingling never. Feeling of like, oh God, it's me. It's my voice that people are listening to in the doctor's waiting room.
It's me. It's like, oh gosh. You know, it's nice though, because people, Northern Irish people on TV and stuff like that, we get a bad reputation for sounding a bit annoying. You know, we get a lot of memes, a lot of viral videos of like people from Northern Ireland's accents. And I was worried that that was going to happen to me, but thankfully it didn't. Well, not to my face anyway.
Where are we up to in terms of sort of representation of people from Northern Ireland on the in the media in the United Kingdom?
Well, in the media, there's no young person coming up, you know, because of reality TV. You've got all of your Love Island stars who kind of have a bit of personality, you know, getting their breaks and ended up hosting spin-offs and hosting podcasts and stuff like that. And I love that. I say, well done you, because it's brilliant. You've capitalized on something. You're going to make loads of money. And actually, if you're good for the job, then why wouldn't you do it? But people from Northern Ireland, for some reason, don't get on those shows. So for young people who like are sort of like 14, 15, 16 year olds that tune into Radio 1, they don't have that voice. They don't know that that person exists, and they don't get that part of that culture or that kind of that voice. So there's no one like that coming up the ranks, which is why I think this project that they've done at Radio 1 is fantastic, because it's allowing people from all over the country to get involved. It's allowing everybody who's got a wee bit of experience or loads of experience to have their voice heard.
What you said there, because the fact that you got such a flood of people, particularly from specifically from Northern Ireland, getting in touch because mm-hmm. in excitement, I guess, at hearing one of their own on Radio 1, suggests to me that there is probably kind of where I was maybe like a decade ago, perhaps a bit longer than that, really, to be honest, when I was first getting into radio, when I was sort of 15, 16, feeling like there were only a handful of really northern voices, you know, right. on the radio. We sort of had Peter Kay, Vernon Kay, Sarah Cox, and that was kind of it, really.
We've only got like Eamon, I mean, this is the list. We've got Patrick Keelty, who doesn't really do much anymore, but I remember watching Patrick Keelty. You've got Patrick Keelty, you've got Eamon Holmes, you've got Christine on Loose Women. That's it.
Mm.
I mean, do you know any other Northern Irish presenters on the radio?
Conor Phillips, but he is on air in Northern Ireland now more than anything, isn't he?
Yeah. Bill Taggart used to be on Radio 1. He just he left there just before Christmas. He's been messaging me. He's a great, great guy. But on Radio 1, there's two new presenters, specialist presenters who've got in, which is just brilliant to see. Mm. But in the widespread media, I don't know of any. I don't hear them.
What is that then?
The opportunity to break into the industry in Northern Ireland is very, very slim. And, oh, you've got Stephen Nolan, of course. Big Stephen
on Five Live.
Got a lot to say. But, you know, the industry in Northern Ireland is tiny. It's a bit stuffy. It doesn't represent the youth at all. In fact, it reports on the youth as, you know, in a negative way. And that, like, if I'm growing up in Northern Ireland and I don't see something to aspire to be on the TV, on the radio. How do I even get into that? Where do I begin? Then it becomes a minefield. And you don't have those agents in Northern Ireland. You don't have that real richness of producing quality content that goes across the country. It's very internal, from what I gather. And I think that's the reason why, you know. But it's such a shame, because Northern Irish people are great storytellers, and they're great to listen to, and they're trustworthy, and they don't take no rubbish. You know, you're going to get what you're going to get most of the time, you know. And I think people need that. They need that style of broadcasting.
I agree. I think it's you're about as warm and as real as it gets in Northern Ireland. My girlfriend's family are from Belfast, from Northern Ireland. And they are great company. They're great entertainers, great storytellers, and people who've also, and that's not a coincidence, by the way, is it? Because of the story of Northern Ireland, right?
Yeah.
And the life experiences of the people that live there, they are ripe for being told and for being heard. Well, you can't get away from Northerners on the radio and in the media these days. So I'm hoping for a flood of people from Northern Ireland as well in the next couple of years.
Hey.
It's been really nice talking to you. Thank you so much. And I hope that you continue to enjoy it and to get as much out of being on a very important breakfast show at a very important moment in history. I hope that you continue to get as much out of that as you put in.
I feel so lucky. Like, I can't tell you how lucky I feel. It was such an opportunity for me. I knocked on Gaelic's door 3 years ago, and I forced them to give me a job. And I volunteered on every show for 4 months. And I've learned so much from the guys there, so much. And I've met incredible people. And I'm a very small part of a big, great, serving family. And it's remarkable. It's really, really remarkable. And the listeners are next level dedicated as well. Yeah, it's really great. And I'm glad that you've reminded me of this today, because I think we get so caught up in creating content, finding interviews, sorting out socials and doing all those things that we have to do, that sometimes we lose sight of just how pivotal this moment is in broadcasting history, you know. There's no such thing as a slow news day anymore. And particularly in the LGBT community, we need to keep everybody going, keep everybody together, and remind people that there's light at the end of the tunnel. And you've reminded me of that today. So thank you.
Good. I saw something on Twitter, I think, the other day that said, if there are a generation of people, of broadcasters and of news people who will have come into the media industry in, say, 2015, late 2015, early 2016, who will have no idea what it means to try and find something to fill the news.
It's so true.
They've no idea what a news filling story looks like. Dean, thank you, my friend. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, buddy.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionics Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to, and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet, and SMS. To unmix, unlock, and understand your content. The Bionic Studio transforms everything about radio, except the way you make it.
Thank you, Daryl, and thank you, Dean, and thank you for your ears as well. Next week we'll have something a little bit different, but completely the same. And a bonus for you next week as well, because this week, taking place online as a virtual event, as everything is these days, there's a Radio Academy Women in Radio and Audio event taking place, either now as you listen to this or yesterday, or you get the idea. But the lineup is fantastic. Lorna Clark, Rebecca Frank, Melanie Dawes, Helen Thomas, Ruth Fitzsimmons and Siobhan Kenny as well, all talking about women in radio and audio. And we'll have a package for you from that event on this very podcast next week. So we'll look forward to that and something completely different.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Mick Essay.
Now, I'm pretty sure I've not told you about Clean Feed yet on the Radio Today programme this week. Let me tell you about Clean Feed. It's about connecting with people over the internet, whether it's an OB, an interview, or if you're co-hosting. Clean Feed is designed for radio and podcasters, and now it's simple to connect live audio over the web. The quality is great, and you can record it as well in the browser. Clean Feed, it doesn't cost you anything to get started, and you can find out more on their website at cleanfeed.net.
Radio Today.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Find out how we're changing radio all over again at bionic.radio.